The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Richard Eaton, Managing Director and Founder of Appware. Thanks for doing this interview, Richard. I know it's actually quite rare to have Northerners on the show, so it's quite nice to have you on the show, to be honest. So a rarity, but quite a nice thing. I don't know whether I'm going to become even more Northern as the show goes on, as I get more and more comfortable with you. So first of all, thanks for being Northern, and secondly, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem at all. One of my sort of signature things if I'm speaking at events is wearing a flat cap just to keep that Northern spirit there as well. So
yeah, over the fells and the moors. Yeah. Well, thanks for doing it. And you know, I think really fascinating to look over your kind of profile before the show. I think I'm just a big advocate of people like you. I'm definitely one of these who contemplates things that I probably don't need to, probably a daydreamer, something some people would probably allude to. But the whole idea of this kind of 9-to-5, right? I mean, I've not talked about this for a while actually on the show, so it'd be interesting to bring it up today. This concept of 9-to-5 and this work life that we have now, you know, the 9-to-5 concept obviously was actually conceived by Henry Ford. And I thought that, you know, maybe after a few decades, we'd potentially have changed that kind of working pattern. But we seem to have kind of stuck with it and in this cycle of kind of 9-to-5ism. And I think just the pressures of modern day life, the way the economy's gone over the last couple of decades as well, I think people are looking towards kind of security as their option. And I look at someone like you, who, you know, clearly, you know, got tremendous entrepreneurial spirit and is, you know, someone who's clearly not afraid to kind of go out and kind of claim their stake in the world, so to speak. It's, I think, an intimidating path to go down. And I think that we get contrived in where we're actually up to because of all the startup activity and the access to funds now and how that's being kind of built. You know, obviously access to capital seemingly is kind of easier than ever, but obviously you're giving away a stake. You can't go down to the bank anymore and just get a loan. You know, those kind of days are over for a business. So I do think that even though there's kind of that perception that, you know, it's easier now than ever to build a company and obviously technology is involved, I think that may be the case, but I also think that it's more of intimidating prospect now than ever. Obviously, someone who looks at things completely different is you. So, you know, what was your always approach, and did you even really think about it as deeply as I clearly do?
Probably not into that depth. It was, if I tell you a little bit about my background and how I even started along the tech route, that probably give a bit more context before I tell you about my current company. So it all starts a long, long time ago now. So when the very first home computers came out, so things like the ZX81s, and like I say, this is really going back. And like most people at that time, when those home computers came out, then people were just interested in games. So like most of my friends, we all got these first home computers, play some games, that kind of thing. And then I started to think, well, I wonder how these things actually work, and started looking at programming and sort of self-taught myself a bit of programming. And then I remember going out one Saturday afternoon and buying a game at the shops, came back, ran this thing, and it just wasn't very good. And at that point, I sort of thought, well, I wonder how difficult this stuff is. I think I could do better than this. So that's what I did. So basically I started to teach myself how to write games. So I got my first commercial software published when I was 14. And I think that was the sort of start of my entrepreneurial journey, really. But having done that and then going through the usual things of like formal education and getting to sort of degree level and thinking, actually, I know exactly what I want to do. So I was going to do a degree, but decided to jump straight into the world of work instead. So I started as a trainee programmer. Something that obviously seen the stuff I was already doing, so that CV looked fairly attractive just from a sort of practical sense. And then I worked my way up, and again took a fairly typical sort of trainee program into development roles and software engineering, and then team leaders, sort of development manager, and then finally, and again this was over a number of years, into sort of director level, sort of technical director. And if we fast forward a few years, I'd always worked in cutting edge technology, so things like the initial satellite TV. Again, one of my claims to fame was one of the first sort of TV commerce platforms, and this was in year 2000, in the sort of dot-com boom time. And then I was working on sort of application streaming technologies over in the States. And it was while I was over in the States that the original iPhone was launched. And again, something just, a light bulb went up at that point. And I said, I believe that's where the future's going. And 18 months later, I exited out of that company and started Appware. And it was always our aim to purely work on apps. So we didn't want to be a digital agency that did everything for everyone. We wanted to concentrate on apps. And that was just over 9 years ago now. And that's sort of what we've done.
Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I think there's clearly a lot of confidence there in your kind of own ability. I always think that the confidence, you know, the ability all go hand in hand with just a level of interest in a subject matter and probably a level of passion as well in what you're actually building. Obviously, from an early age, you had a keen interest in technology. It doesn't probably feel like work when it's something that you're genuinely interested in.
Yeah, definitely. It's and interestingly, it's the sort of approach we take when we're recruiting as well, is that if people would be doing this stuff anyway in their own time, then they've obviously got a real passion for it. It's not just a job. They really want to work on this stuff. And again, because we always want to be sort of pushing the boundaries and working on cutting edge things, that's really important. And it, again, sort of within our company, we dedicate time for people. So we have a thing called Friday Afternoon Fun, where every Friday afternoon, anyone can work on any sort of project that they want. So it's that self-learning and self-development for people. Because as you know, usually with projects and developers, you've got X hours, you've got to try and get things done in those hours. And if you want to learn or look at new technologies that you think might advance the company, you're supposed to do that in your own time, which a lot of people still do, but it seems a little unfair. So we have half a day a week set aside for people to look into new technologies. And there's been some really good things that have come from that. So obviously our project manager's like, well, we're giving away half a day a week where we could be doing client work. But I'm taking a sort of higher view where we're trying out new technologies, and some of those things have become part of our standard tool set as well. So it works really well from the company perspective and also the individual's perspective.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a time investment in keeping on top of the game, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, I think you have to make that time. I mean, I think a lot of companies don't formally make that time for people to be able to, you know, work on whatever, make sure they're kind of keeping their eye in, for lack of a better term. But they don't build the formal time in there. They kind of expect people to make that own time investment maybe outside of office hours. I'm sure that's something that you considered, but was it just something for you that felt like kind of a no-brainer to just make it part of their kind of experience and maybe, you know, from a recruitment perspective, give you an advantage?
Yeah, exactly. So we're only a smallish company, and we're competing with larger companies when it comes to recruitment. So in our particular area, there's a couple of like big multinational companies that they can compete on. They're a great name to have on people's CV. They tend to pay well over the odds, sort of 20% over what everyone else pays wage-wise. So we need to compete in a different way. So we do that with things like that, with flexibility, with remote working, all these things. We just, rather than just leveling this playing field, rather than just having the same approach as those guys by throwing money and a big name, we can do things a little bit differently. And that's what we try to do with all our things, is just be a little bit different, really.
Interesting, yeah. Well, I think you have to now. I mean, I'm sure that when you first got involved in software, you probably never expected the demand for talent to reach the point that it is now. There must have been, you know, the demand when you started out, but maybe nowhere near to the extent that it is now.
Yeah, I think it was definitely an emerging sort of marketplace, and things were heading that way when I first got involved. But probably the last 15 years, finding and keeping decent people is the biggest struggle, because virtually everyone's in a technology company these days, and good people are hard to find and keep. So, like I say, you've got to do things a bit differently, and I just believe in treating people the right way anyway. So thankfully, we don't have a high turnover of staff, and like I say, our approach to recruitment is probably a little bit different as well. But like I say, our very first employee is still with us now, and he's obviously progressed massively from 8 years ago when he started with us.
The thing that I think is tough now is that there is obviously this demand, but the demand for what skill set there is has changed dramatically. So there seems to be a lot of hiring pressure from my perspective on companies. So you probably feel the same thing as well, to build programs that, you know, actually allow people to progress. Because at the end of the day, you know, you're the first employee that you had who's been there 8 years. Yeah, you're kind of learning a skill set, but at the same time, you know, technology over the last 8 years has dramatically changed. So he has to have not only kind of learned what he needed to learn at years one and two, but then constantly, like, you know, revisit his skill set over that period of time. So for me, that's the difficult bit now for engineers, is that you have to have that kind of drive to constantly learn, you know, new technologies, because it's almost seems like it's every 6 months now, there's something new that you kind of have to learn. So it puts you in an interesting position that, yeah, you have to actually acquire the talent, but then beyond that, you also have to have that process within the company where they can continuously progress and keep up to date with, you know, the way things are moving technically.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, even using a similar sort of skill set and same tools, then just the versions of those change massively in a year. So if we were writing things in Angular and now we're up to Angular whatever it is now, because they keep changing all the time and don't seem to go sequentially either, And a lot of that is, well, we need to relearn things. So it ties in nicely to what we were saying before, actually, that we want people that like live and breathe this stuff because they want to be playing with new things all the time. So if you get the right people, then these technologies changing is actually a good thing because the developers, especially in my experience, they like new and shiny things. They don't want to just work on C++ forever and that's it. They want new things to learn and, like I said, I use the word play with, but that's probably the wrong phrase. And so it's a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy that because things are changing constantly, then they're constantly learning new things and don't feel like they're just going stale and being left behind because we are always trying to look at these new things. And I say that that whole Friday afternoon thing fits in with that beautifully as well, really.
Is there the demand as well for people who have more than just the technical capabilities now? From your perspective, you know, you said you want people involved who just have that a genuine passion. But obviously, you know, I've been involved myself with startups, so I know that the need for people to come into the company and kind of wear many hats. I'm sure it's relatively similar with a company like yours. So that adds a new dynamic as well. And I just wonder whether you've noticed, you know, it maybe not directly with you, but a shift from this generation now, the youngsters of this generation, whether they are more inclined and have a better understanding of, you know, the commercial instincts that you might need. Because I think there's the perception, and I tend to agree with it, whether it's generalizing or not, that technical people certainly struggle with the commercial side of things and maybe the softer skills that are required in perhaps like a leadership role, more so than, you know, someone who's not in a technical position. And now, because the way that software's gone, it's such a viable career for people, whereas it wasn't quite as obvious. It's almost becoming kind of a traditional career now, which is crazy. That people going into it because of the career and not someone like you who got started out because you were just interested and fascinated by technology. I wonder whether that breeds like a different personality from, you know, looking at it from a high level perspective.
So I tend to agree with you that yes, there's the sort of stereotypical developer who just wants to work on his stuff with his headphones on because he needs to concentrate, all that kind of, there's that view. And like I say, in my experience, then I tend to see that, but it may be because of the people we're attracting. And again, that sort of feeds into the way we work, where everyone is based within 30 miles of our office, but work remotely. So most people work from home. And for developers, that's actually really attractive because it means they haven't got that busy environment where they are being constantly distracted. I still think it's really important that there's a real feeling of being in a team. So it's getting that balance right. So we used to have an office where everyone was, and just over 3 years ago went to this remote way of working. We still physically get together once a week for half a day. So Monday mornings, we all physically come to the office because we still have a small office, and have our team meeting and basically go through everything that's going on in the company. So our marketing person gives a little report on what we're doing marketing wise. We go through, the project manager goes through all our projects, and we sort of plan the next week ahead as well. So I think that, let's say, with the developers we've attracted, and maybe it's because we have a certain view on how people like to work, then maybe we've just attracted those sorts of people. that don't tend to be interested in the commercial aspect. They're interested in technology and just want to use technology.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you kind of, maybe we can't accept that in a small company, but maybe it's still a viable option, I suppose, for people wanting to go into those larger organizations, and maybe they're the people that you aren't necessarily going to stumble across. And I've seen companies maybe change the structure as well. I mean, obviously this won't be something that, that maybe your company will come across, but certainly something that maybe is advantageous for you is that companies, people, you know, develop their careers, get to a point of inflection in their technical careers where it's like, right, to progress, I've got to go into some kind of management role. And I'm sure you kind of had that experience as well. And maybe they don't want to go down that road. So you are seeing some companies kind of breed this hybrid where, yeah, you can still progress and stay purely technical, but it's still not that common. So I'm sure that, like, maybe that's advantageous for small businesses like yours, to where you can kind of attract that talent where it's like, yeah, you can have, you know, big influence, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you know, quote unquote, manage people, which is as to be kind of expected, unfortunately, for people to kind of get to that, you know, next level, next pay grade or whatever it is.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Again, it's an interesting one that I've always, because I've sort of gone through all those different roles into the sort of managerial roles, then I found that really helpful when talking to my developers, because they know that I've trodden that path already, and I can, even though my sort of skill set's now way out of date, I can still apply some of the just general principles of programming and can genuinely help people out if they're struggling with a problem or an issue. And I think people have more respect for you rather than a manager just coming in who has no actual development experience and just has, say, project management experience. Again, that's something we've tried to nurture within the company as well. So last year we brought a more senior developer in, who's our head of development now, and he's still hands-on developer as well. So I think that helps rather than just being this big difference between, oh, well, there's developers and then there's a management level. We're fairly flat structure. And so I think that really helps that people can actually ask technical questions and don't just think, oh, well, there's no point asking because he's not done any of this stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, from your perspective as well, how has the kind of cultural side of things evolved in your business over the last 9 years? Obviously, the remote side of things really changing, but I think it's quite interesting that, you know, you only have to meet once a week. Because what I tend to find is when you're in a busy office, there seems to be meetings that people have about meetings upon meetings.
Yeah.
And then a meeting about why did we do that in that meeting. And, you know, you only meet half a day and get all the meetings out of done. Have you found that that's really a more efficient way of working, just, you know, just out of curiosity from my perspective?
Yeah, so that half day on a Monday is more about everyone feeling part of the team. And let's say you can often achieve more face-to-face, and especially if we've got two people on one project and someone else that's not involved in that project, the two people might be talking about an issue they're having, and the other guy would say, oh, actually, I have a similar thing on the project I'm working on, and this is how I solved it. So no matter what happens, some great conversations come out of that, and things get solved by people that aren't working on a particular project. But again, it's down to, if you want to run a remote team, you've got to have the right infrastructure set up. So we use Slack for day-to-day communications. You've just got to be a bit more organised if you try and run things remotely. So everyone is constantly talking on Slack throughout the day anyway. And we obviously use things like Skype for real conversations. And then we have sort of a cloud-based project management tool as well, so everyone knows exactly what they're doing at any time. And let's say it sounds like everyone disappears for a week and then doesn't speak, but they're actually talking day to day, constantly anyway. But it's finding those right tools, because we weren't using those tools. We were just using Slack and emails were going back and forth initially. And the whole team spirit just disappeared, especially bringing brand new recruits in. Then it's, well, how do you get them engaged with the company? It's very different than if someone new starts in an office. It's very easy for them to start to fit in and have conversations and that kind of thing. Where when you're remote, you've got to manage that a bit more to sort of not force, but I say you've just got to manage it so there's more communication to bring someone in and make them feel part of the existing team. And the face-to-face stuff definitely helps with that.
Well, I can just imagine that, like you say, I think it's a really key note with it is the infrastructure has to be right. You know, that there has to be a constant open dialogue. You know, exactly like project management software and things like that are quite obvious. And I think that I can imagine, at least, should I say, that those meetings that you have once a week, it's so different. Because I can imagine people genuinely quite looking forward to though that day, and you know, kind of excited to catch up, meet, show off what they've been working on for the week.
Yeah.
You know, that's a different environment than a lot of businesses have, where you know people are kind of dragging their heels into a meeting. So that must make those kind of meetings much more productive and kind of set the tone for the following week. Does that feel like it's the case?
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, it's not, oh, we've got a meeting. It's a, oh, great, we've got a meeting, which is the opposite of the sort of whole corporate environment, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. It definitely is. Well, I like you say, I'm an advocate of it if the infrastructure is right. I think that a lot of businesses will go that way, especially with just the way real estate's going. I mean, it's getting crazy to rent space out at the moment. You know, it's becoming such a burden on businesses is the real estate, you know, and if you want to get the best talent as a brick, you know, and have the brick and mortar in the right areas, you've got to be kind of centrally located. So it just adds more and more cost build up over time. And there's still the demand there, but you know, imagine how much money can you probably save if you're a business, say, of 50 to 60 people, and you, you know, are able to cut, you know, the office costs in half or if not more, by simply kind of going remote. Obviously, it's a big kind of change management project, really, to do that. But the savings and potentially the autonomy that people probably feel to be able to work, you know, on their own hours and things like that, is probably massively satisfactory for, you know, the average person who's got kids and extremely busy life.
Yeah, that's it. Let's say the sort of working world has changed a lot over the last sort of 15 years, I'd say. And people do want that flexibility. And again, that's one of the things that we really sort of try and help people with is being flexible. So I remember the days years ago, and again, I sort of based things on when I was employed, on the silly little things that were annoying about having to go to an office and sit in traffic for 2 hours a day, and, oh, well, I've got to have my car MOT'd, so I need to take half a day off to do that, and all those kinds of things. Or I say to people, well, no, don't bother taking any time off to do those kind of things. Just go get it done and make that time up. It's absolutely fine. It's just about that flexibility. And again, it was interesting. When we first went remote, then the caveat with it all was right at the start that I said, and again, I didn't sort of push this on everyone. I said, would everyone like to try this going remote? Because some people don't get on with it and find it very difficult to work at home. But thankfully, everyone was on board and we said, well, we'll try it. If it doesn't work in 3 months, then we'll move back to an office. That's the worst case scenario. That's not a bad thing, is it? Thankfully, everyone did get on with it. So it was all good. But it's silly things. Like I say, it's the 2 hours sat in traffic. So there's the cost and time savings for everyone on petrol and all that kind of stuff. But then when we had all that snow in January, and I was seeing lots of companies sort of say, oh, well, we're having to close the office today. We can't do this. We can't do that. It didn't affect us at all. And it's silly things like that that you just sort of take for granted after a while. But actually, it's a big thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a big motivator. Like you say, the things, the travel costs, the, you know, the feeling, the need to take time off to do kind of miscellaneous tasks. And, you know, these things add up. You know, it's expensive. So it's probably worth more in salary to you, to be fair as well, isn't it? From that perspective. Yeah. So, yeah. I think it's the way things are going. I hope, anyway. I think just more autonomy. I think the way that people work needs to change. Like I said at the start of the show, you know, it was Henry Ford, you know, the founder of Ford Motor Company that, you know, designed the 9-to-5. And it's been extremely productive, of course. And I think that there's still a place for it in certain professions, potentially. But I think if it's possible, I think it's just a more enjoyable way that people can get their work done. Surely. I mean, it has to be, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Then you find different sorts of roles. Then in some roles, if you're in a support role, then yes, you've sort of got to have some fixed hours because people are expecting support at particular times. But then, especially with sort of creative work, then 9-to-5 probably isn't the ideal working times for someone. You're either in a creative mood or you're not, so you can adjust your workload accordingly. Again, I plan my day quite well, and I know the times that I need to do particular types of work. So creative work for me is really good when there's no one else around. So I tend to come into the office at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I have a couple of hours where I can do that kind of creative work and get no distractions. That's a big key to that. But then the more mundane things, like invoice raising and all those kinds of things that need doing, I tend to find early afternoon is my slump. So I try to plan my day around doing those just administrative tasks at those sorts of times when I'm not at my most creative. And everyone's different. Some people work well later in the afternoon. Everyone's different. So you sort of try and change the way you work according to that.
Yeah, interesting. We're at half an hour now, so I don't want to keep you too much longer, Richard. But just before we close it down, on the mobile stuff now, obviously things seem to be, you know, constantly changing in that space. And, you know, we're looking at kind of the Alexa and these kind of Alexa skills and things like that. Is that something that you're kind of keeping a close eye on, or are you, you know, still solely focused on mobile for the time being?
It's funny you should mention Alexa. So we did some stuff with Alexa around Christmas time. And just yesterday, then we've got a client that wants some Alexa skills building. So that's a comedy timing with that one. But we are focusing on apps still, but what we're finding is it's less and less about someone comes to us, they've got an idea for an app they want to put into the store, sell for 99p and grow things that way. It tends to be a lot of enterprise work we're doing these days. So going into businesses, seeing how they currently run things, and seeing how technology can help improve that. So invariably, it's still app-based because everyone is carrying around a smartphone. Everyone's got one. So why don't we use that technology? So rather than people have to use laptops and all that kind of thing within the company, they can use their own smartphone. So that's where we're seeing a lot of traction. So it's still very app-based, but all the associated services behind, because we need to integrate with other existing systems as well.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I think it's... I think you're in a good space, mate. Yeah, and if you have the ability to make skills as well, I think you'll be okay.
yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I think you'll be fine. Richard, it's been really interesting talking with you, mate. Thank you so much. I can't believe we're already at 36 minutes, actually. So thank you so much. I could talk for hours with you. So, pleasure, and thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.